From Peoria Public Radio, this is Out and About. I'm Nathan Irwin.
And I'm Jen Gordon from Arts Partners of Central Illinois. This week, we're talking with John Jost, director of the Bradley Community Chorus, and Tim Semenek, director of the Bradley Symphony Orchestra. They're presenting a concert this Sunday afternoon featuring Mozart's Mass in C and Dona Nobis Pacem by Ralph Vaughan Williams. Thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you so much for fitting us in.
Thank you for having us.
Now, John and Tim, you've selected two epic master choral works for this program. Tell us why you decided to juxtapose these two works together and how they complement one another.
Well, John actually emailed me over the summer, and this concert is originally scheduled to be in St. Mary's, and I think he had a different idea for what he wanted to do. When the renovation happened, we realized we were going to be in Dingledine at Bradley, which is a smaller venue. And he said, listen, I'd like to move this piece to next year. Would you like to pick a piece that you would like to do? It's the second half of this program. And I pretty much, without hesitating, I think it took me about 2 minutes to write him back and say, you know what, I would love to do the Ralph Vaughan Williams Dona Nobis Pacem. It's just a beautiful piece. It's something that I've studied and assisted on in years past, and I've just been dying to do. I absolutely love it.
What is it about the Vaughan Williams piece that appeals to you?
Pretty much the entire thing. I absolutely love the text. And we especially, you know, there's pretty much not a time in history where we couldn't, you know, use this begging for peace. And it turns out now, and with the events of this week, it's a little bit even more pertinent. And it's just set in such a wonderful way. It's the, you know, the Dona Nobis Pacem is the end, the last line of the typical setting of the Mass. And so he begins with that to start in the first movement. And then he takes us through three Whitman poems, and it runs the gamut. The second movement is pretty much an experience of war in a way. This Beat, Beat, Drums poem by Walt Whitman. You hear trumpets and trombones and brass and drums, and there's all the energy and angst of wartime. And then the third movement is another Walt Whitman poem, Reconciliation, which takes a rather more universal approach, much more of a worldview feeling on war and peace. And then the fourth movement, Dirge for Two Veterans, brings us back to a more intimate view, more specific, where we see this long march, this long procession of two soldiers that are to be buried. It turns out that they're father and son. It's just heart-wrenching. And yet, at the same time, at the end and at the beginning, he intersperses these kind of glimpses of hope. And then he continues on with probably the darkest moment, this poem by John Bright, which alludes to the Passover situation. And then he moves on to Jeremiah, which, you know, has allusions to the Babylonian exile, where, you know, the Hebrews are just wailing, and, you know, is there no balm in Gilead? Is there no physician here? Where it's just, please help us. He kind of takes us down to the depth. And throughout this, he brings us back to this opening, Dona Nobis Pacem, this just begging for help, begging for peace. And he takes us there at the end of this movement. And just when you kind of feel this despair, he comes in with this line from Daniel, O man greatly beloved, fear not, peace be unto thee, be strong, yea, be strong. And the whole tenor changes. And then we get into this glorious last movement where he takes these more positive verses from the Bible, nation shall not lift up a sword against nation, and none shall make them afraid, mercy and truth are met together, etc., etc. And it's just, you're filled with such, there's just so much hope and so much, like, yes, no matter what, this is fine. We're going to be okay. And he ends with this, you know, this wonderful passage from Luke that we'll hear a lot at Christmas time that's coming up. Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill towards men. And then that he doesn't end in this bombastic, huge, like rah-rah type way. But what does he do? He brings us back to that opening, Dona Nobis Pacem. And now we're in a completely different setting. Even though it has the same sort of feeling and the same sort of, it has the same half-step descent that we heard at the very beginning and throughout the piece, we're in a different place. It's almost been imbued with hope. And you kind of leave just, it ends so quietly, but you leave with a little bit more of like, it's okay. everything is going to be fine. And so it's just structured in that way. I mean, I'm talking all about text, but what he does with the music for this text is what is also absolutely brilliant.
One of the things that I find really interesting about this piece is the way Vaughan Williams goes back to the work of Walt Whitman. And Vaughan Williams saw service in World War I. Mm-hmm. Walt Whitman fought in the Civil War. So there's this sort of borrowing of conflict from different eras, different centuries, even different nations.
Sure. And this was his, you know, this was written before, right before World War II. It was his plea for peace and for us to not get into another war like that. I mean, I think he lied about his age to get into service in World War I, and he became, like Hemingway, I think, an ambulance driver or ambulance mm-hmm. carrier, you know, pulling off wounded. And so he saw a lot, and he knew what was in store, and so this was his answer.
Which is interesting, because Whitman did the same thing. He served in the medical corps in the Civil
right.
War, and he was
yeah.
on the front lines, and he saw this carnage. And one of his lines that is just, as Tim said, heart-wrenching in this movement, Reconciliation, he says, "Beautiful that war and all its deeds of carnage must in time be utterly lost, that the hands of the sisters, death and night, incessantly, softly wash again and ever again this soiled world."
Hmm. Powerful lines. I can't help but think that the dirge for two veterans in Rafe's mind when he's composing this, he's actually thinking of him and Walt Whitman side by side with their respective experiences that they've had. Tim, I want to go back to what you said about the piece opening with Dona Nobis Pacem and closing with Dona Nobis Pacem and the expansive emotions that we experience in between. And Vaughan Williams is able to tell it with a very victorious harmonic language at certain times. The piece features two soloists, and Dr. Carrie Walters, who's on faculty at Bradley University, she's the voice that opens the piece
yes.
and closes the piece. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Exactly. She's sort of the voice of pleading. She starts off, and we actually do begin with, not with Dona Nobis Pacem exactly, but with the Agnus Dei, Lamb of God, takes away the sins, peccata mundi, takes away the sins of the world, grant us peace. And so we keep hearing, she's almost, as John said last night, she's almost like this angel kind of coming out, this voice from somewhere that just keeps coming out. And the chorus then answers her in a more just absolutely wailing and just heart-wrenching way. And the orchestra, you know, there's just so much more energy and so much, I don't know, angst to it. And then she, you know, this keeps coming back throughout. It's not just at the beginning and not at the end, but I think there's two other times where we hear her come back. It's like we just can't get away from it. And it's just a constant reminder that this is what we're hoping for and this is what we're yearning for. I mean, even though he takes us into the depths of despair, sometimes you can hear from the lines that John read, there's just this glimmer of hope mm-hmm. that the sisters' death and night will be utterly destroyed and you know, something good is going to come out. We can make this better, perhaps.
You know, John, that contrast of despair and hope is also something that's present in many, many settings of the traditional Mass, like the Mass in C, the Mozart piece.
Right.
I'm not familiar with this particular Mass, but is that contrast, that moving back and forth between those emotional states also present in the
yeah,
Mozart?
Yes, and it's interesting because starting with a piece like the Dona Nobis Pacem, which is about 40 minutes long, we want to find a piece, sort of a companion piece. You don't want to find a piece that says exactly the same thing
sure.
in the same way. And at first I thought Mozart is kind of a curious companion, but the Mass text ends with Dona Nobis Pacem.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing about the Mozart Mass, he was 19. When he wrote this, which, of course, was a mature age for him. He had written his violin concertos and a lot of symphonies. But the archbishop, there's this famous story about the archbishop in the Salzburg Cathedral where Mozart was employed, who didn't like long masses. And part of it was, I think, he resented this kind of happy music, which Mozart couldn't help but write. And so either the archbishop was away or there was some special occasion, he got to write a 30-minute Mass rather than a 12-minute Mass.
Okay.
And he just throws everything into it. And he is so exuberant. Even in the Lord Have Mercy, Kyrie Eleison, it's just this happy piece. But then he gets into a much more sensitive settings and more like Donan qui tollis peccata mundi, who takes away the sins of the world. You hear this anguish. You hear a lot of different moods. But then at the end, the Dona Nobis Pacem, it's happy again. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's almost like a comic opera, the Dona Nobis Pacem. It's a very curious movement. So that's kind of a strange segue into the anguished Dona Nobis Pacem. But I think it really does give different sides of the same sentiment.
I mean, I think a lot of us may be familiar with Mozart's Requiem, which, by contrast, he wrote towards the very end of his life, and that is a much darker and much more dramatic piece. So, in addition to being almost at opposite ends of his career, how do they differ musically? What's the contrast?
Well, the as I said, this is basically very upbeat, happy music. He was already an extremely skilled composer. I mean, if you look at the other music that classical composers were writing at the same time, Mozart's is just head and shoulders, you know. You wonder what this poor archbishop, how he couldn't appreciate having someone like this writing music. But this mass almost reminds me of one of those big friendly dogs that comes up to you. And it's just certain that you're going to like him, and he's just, you know, jumping on you and everything. And it's Mozart saying, "Don't you like my music? This melody is so wonderful." And all of this. It's just a great piece of music. And I was not familiar with it either. I had never heard it before.
Hmm. What's the response that you hope the audience will have both to the Mass and the Dona Nobis Pacem, particularly in the climate that you referenced with the recent attacks that have been happening over the world?
Well, I think that with almost any concert that we present, we're hoping that people come away moved in some capacity. I think it's a little bit easier for a piece like this that just kind of slaps you in the face in a way, you know. One of the choristers came up to me afterwards yesterday and said, are you responsible for this piece? Because I've been moved every rehearsal. I've been moved. And I said the same thing to them during one rehearsal. I said, I get to this moment, and no matter how many, I've been looking at this piece for the past 4 months, and every time we get here, I get goosebumps. Every time we get to this moment, I feel like I'm about to cry. And so, at least for the Vaughan Williams, I hope that that's their experience too. That they, there's some side of thought. It's one thing to read Whitman and to look at these beautiful words, and English majors might disagree with me, but when they're set by a genius like Vaughan Williams, then there's something else. It's just there's more depth to it, And I hope that people don't go away crying from the Mozart, because I think it's something completely different. And not that I want them to be tearing up with Vaughan Williams, but I think that there's just so much there to let themselves feel and let themselves be and enjoy in that capacity.
I think part of it with Vaughan Williams, he was not an ivory tower composer. He loved melody, even though there are some parts of this piece that are quite dissonant. And it was interesting because after his service in World War I, when World War II came around and he was in his 60s, he spent a lot of time working with refugees, finding them jobs. I mean, he was really out there. He was not a pacifist like Benjamin Britten when Benjamin Britten wrote his War Requiem, but he was extremely sensitive to everything that was going on and a part of everything that was going on outside of just writing music. But he also felt that writing music and teaching music was a way to improve civilization. And that was kind of his main task in terms of his own contribution to making peace.
Just one process question. I know that the chorus and the orchestra, for the most part, rehearse separately to prepare for this concert. So how much time do the two ensembles spend sort of in their own silos? And then at what part in the rehearsal process do the two of you start crossing over? So, John, when do you start working with the orchestra? And Tim, when do you start working with the chorus as you put it together?
Well, the chorus, this is our semester project, and the orchestra generally has two concerts in the semester. So they start a little bit later. Mm-hmm. We've been working on this for 2.5 months, I guess. And because of scheduling difficulties, we generally have two dress rehearsals together. That's it. And we just throw as much at them as we possibly can in those two rehearsals.
We've been talking with John Jost and Tim Semenik from the Bradley Community Chorus and the Bradley Symphony Orchestra. They're in concert Sunday afternoon at 3 at the Dingeldine Music Center in Peoria with a program that includes music by Mozart and Ralph Vaughan Williams. And again, thank you both for being with us today.
Thank you for having us.
Also happening this weekend is the 5th Annual Hopewell, Illinois Artist Holiday Open House. It takes place in Hopewell. Well, that's silly. It takes place in Hopewell, Illinois. It takes place Saturday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Sunday from 12 to 4.
The Peoria Symphony Orchestra is in concert this weekend with cellist Brinton Smith. The program includes Dvorak's Cello Concerto and the Firebird Suite by Stravinsky. That concert is tomorrow night at 8 at the Peoria Civic Center.
Out and About is a production of Peoria Public Radio and Arts Partners of Central Illinois. Each week, we connect you to the arts community by talking with local arts leaders and performers.
Our producer is Sierra Doss. You can listen to an extended version of this interview by going to our website, peoriapublicradio.org. I'm Nathan Irwin, and this is Out and About. Our producer is Sierra Doss. You can learn more about Peoria Public Radio when you visit our website, peoriapublicradio.org. I'm Nathan Irwin, and this is Out and About. All right.
Bravo. Very nice.
Thank you very much.